got a fun one for you this week, bitches.
That's right. Are you ready to talk about making your dreams come true in Hollywood while looking like a model?
Are you ready to talk about what it's like to have power and trauma?
when those things combine, you become successful. A star. That's right. Media mogul, actor, writer, extraordinaire, Dwayne Perkins is on the show today.
And it's a wild one, bitches. So yeah. Enjoy.
Get ready.
M.
Oh.
M.
Mom!
When your first choice is a big old bus,
you turn around and boom, you end up with us.
Our number is 213-536.
Yeah.
91.
What?
80. Or email us sloppyseconds@gmail.com. Now on with the show. Oh, how you sub used to affect your nether ref. Sloppy seconds with Big Dipper Meatball.
The words?
I'm Meatball, and that's Big Dipper. I'm on my third Red Bull.
It's crank, as they would say, crank city.
I'm cranked. Sugar free.
It's did Christina Aguilera do red hair?
No. But it is very much like when she did it in Blonde and Black for Dirty.
Right.
When she,
right,
in fact, was black.
I feel like I tee you up for that joke every time.
Do you remember that, though? Those were different times.
Do you like comedy?
Yes.
Do you like social commentary?
Yes.
Do you like being pretty and looking like a model and being successful?
Never happened.
Well, get ready for all that. Please welcome our very special guest today,
Dwayne Perkins!
Ow, bow, 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 bow. Oh, my God. Thank you. That was a great intro. More people should say that. The pretty part.
That you're pretty and successful.
Thank you.
And a model.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
How are you?
I'm doing well.
So nice to see you.
Likewise. How are you too?
You know.
Good.
Yeah, doing it.
I'm not convinced.
Okay. 100% honest with you, I like got home from New York at like 1:30 this morning. So I like slept for like maybe 45 minutes and then got into drag for this.
Okay.
So baby, I'm cranked on the Red Bull.
Oh, you just say third and I said yikes, right, on the inside.
That's why my stomach was growling.
Oh, it's saying help me.
Please don't kill me.
There are people though in this world who really still don't truly know what water is.
Oh yeah.
And it's like they'll spend the day drinking Red Bulls.
Yes. I had my last like writer's room, everybody drank coffee and I didn't. So I was like, oh, I'll just like drink a Red Bull to like stay up. And by like the third or fourth day, I was feeling crazy. And they were like, yeah, you've drank a Red Bull like every day. And I don't drink a lot of caffeine. Mm. And I was like, now I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And some people get addicted to it. Like, I know that there's some people that, like, they just drink coffee 3 or 4 cups every morning. And that's you.
I'm a big coffee drinker.
And then he'll drink enough water, but then in the afternoon, like 2 o'clock, you go in for more coffee.
I do. And I now, you know, it's always the thing, like, my mom used to always say, like, oh, I can't have chocolate after 5 p.m. I'll be up all night. The caffeine. I am now of the age, an older age.
45.
Thank you. But I'm now of the age that if I do drink coffee past 5 p.m., I will be up late. It's a new thing. We learn and grow and change every day.
What is late?
To me, like past midnight is late.
Like 2, 3.
Whoa.
Oh, you're a night owl.
What time are you
not
waking up?
Gasp.
We are early.
I go to bed at 11:30. What time are you? So you're going to bed at 2 or 3 in the morning. What time are you getting up to
usually
begin your
like
day?
8:39.
Okay, that's productive.
Yeah, that's
like normal.
Great.
You just like actively don't need as much sleep as most people.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying it's the best, but that's what I'm working with.
I love that. That's a great way to come to the table. Okay, so most of our listeners will probably know you from your movie The Blackening.
Oh, nice.
Which came out last year.
Yes, last summer.
I mean, this is a broad stroke question.
Do it.
But how was it for you to see an idea from its infancy all the way up to like the biggest version of itself? Like that movie came out of a sketch, mm-hmm, that then sort of got developed into the movie, and then the movie happened and was released in theaters. That's like the whole, that's like the success story.
Yes.
Was that fun? You always ask questions like that. You're always like, how was that?
How was that for you?
You know, it was very affirming in the sense of I've always kind of moved in a, like, I think I'm great kind of vibe. Being like, I just don't think people know yet. Like, they just don't know what I'm capable of. So then to have something that like followed me in that way as my career was like growing, it was kind of like this constant reminder, be like, I knew I had something. Mm. And so that was like a great confidence booster. And then it brought a lot of good, like a lot of other opportunities spawned from it. So it just was kind of like the origin of my career, like in general. And I think it's beautiful that the origin of my career came from me at a time where there was nothing for me to create art, but for the sake of creating art. So it feels very like pure. That's so awesome. I love it.
It was such a good movie.
Oh, yeah.
My friend Sashir rented out a movie theater and like invited all of her friends to go watch it. And I was dying the whole time. So tell me, what Thank was the you. Sketch? Like, how did you extend a sketch out from like a stage sketch to then Comedy Central, then to a full movie?
Yes. I was working at a comedy institution in Chicago. And they had like...
Don't say their name.
I will not. That's why I said okay. Comedy Institution.
Yeah. We'll get to that.
I kept it quite general.
Yes, you did.
You won't get free promo from me. But we were doing an all-black sketch show. And it was like a big deal because, you know, they had a race problem. And so we needed like an opening sketch for that particular show. And I remember I was on my couch. I was like a little high and I was watching horror movies. And I was just like, oh, like that would be really cool to kind of parallel the experiences of like the black people at this institution to like horror and how we were all kind of like token off at one time. So then if we all come together, like if we were all in a horror movie, like if they had to pick like who's the blackest of the tokens, how would they do it? Mm-hmm. So that kind of paralleled to black people's relationship in horror movies. And I was like, oh, that's a great idea. That if we were all in a horror movie and the black person had to die first, then how would they decide they'd have a competition? Or like, we'd have to like talk about race in a way where like you're not necessarily saying like I'm the blackest, but you're trying to speak to like the parts of you that are not seen as black to save yourself. So that's like a backwards way into the commentary of talking about like what is blackness.
Yeah.
So it was like very layered. I thought I was like so deep. I was like, oh, this is so cool. And then and then that was put up in Chicago. Then it moved to DC in like this bigger theatrical show. And then my improv group Threepeat had a web series deal with Comedy Central. And that was a sketch that I submitted to be filmed. So they picked that one first. So we like filmed it. They put it up and then it went viral. And then that's when Tracy Oliver saw it and was like, hey, this should be a movie. And I was like, bet. Okay. Because again, I was like, well, I never did a movie, but like, I feel like I can do it. Just be delusionally confident. You could do anything.
I'm jealous.
And so then, yeah, then we wrote it. It was bought. It got into TIFF where it premiered, and then it was bought by Lionsgate, and then it premiered in America at Tribeca, and then it came out in the summer. It was truly crazy.
Like, it made money.
So it did. Oh, yeah, it did make a ton of money. Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
Rich.
relatively.
What, aside from yourself, was anyone from like the original sketch in Chicago involved all the way up to the movie? Like any of the actors, or like, did anyone sort of glom on?
Just me.
Just
did you get any emails about that?
No. Oh,
I originated the role.
No. I think that like Threepeat, like they're still my closest friends right now, and the purpose of community is like knowing that it's like us versus them, and not them versus us. So even throughout this process. When we first got it, they were like, oh, yeah, like, you wrote the sketch. Like, we were actors, and, like, we're your friends. Like, absolutely, go do this opportunity. And they know that, like, I didn't have any power. Like, they know how the system works. So it would be kind of, to be frank, dumb to have any feelings, knowing that, like, I was just, like, pulled up by some people. Just being like, hey, come do this thing. So yeah, there's been nothing but support, and they know that like, if I could, they would like
yeah
right
they know my people are always at the front of the line.
Love that.
I'm a very much open the door, leave it open. Please come. I don't want to be by myself.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
One thing I loved in the movie also is, like, you know, I don't watch a lot of horror movies, so I'm no expert on the genre. But anytime I find a movie that I deem not too scary and that I can watch on a Saturday morning at 10 a.m. while the sun is shining bright, I'm always sort of amazed at the, like, scenes in between the murders when people are, like, running from stuff or doing stuff and then choose to hash out their interpersonal dynamic. And I always just think to myself, I'm like, just keep running. Like, you'll deal with that later. And what I loved is that you elevated that in the movie. And that was actually, like, the majority of the movie was, like, hashing through, like, all of the, like, the friend group drama. And that, you know, made it just so much more layered and fun to watch.
Thank you. I really am, like, obsessed with, like, horror movies and movies in general. I'm just, like, a really big nerd. So it was very fun to, like, try to make it as, like, smart as possible, but also, like, imbuing as much as I could. There's so many references. There's so many things that I'm, like, directly making fun of. There's just, like, a lot that we put in it. And it's always nice to hear, like, different people's, like, what they got from it. Because, like, that's the, like, you're the first person to, like, point that out specifically. And I'm like, thank you.
What's your favorite horror movie?
Yeah.
It kind of ranges. Like, Candyman is, like, a very special movie to me because it was, like, the first horror movie that I felt real because it was filmed where my cousins lived. And maybe, like, oh, I have family in Cabrini Green. That's where Candyman is. Like, it was just, like, my child brain could not separate that, like, this is not real. How? It's right there. So that is, like, a very special horror movie that, like, just, like, stuck with me for a long time. But I really love The Bride of Chucky.
That one's really camp.
Like,
yeah,
like, as a kid, like, and me kind of forming my, like, point of view, like, the horror comedy aspect of that, that was, like, an awakening for me. Because I remember the poster was, like, a parody of, like, the Scream poster. And I was like, oh, this is so cool. And then to see that movie where, like, we know the bad person is, like, Chucky, but we're still, like, rooting for him because he's, like, the protagonist. And to, like, see kind of that shift in that series, I thought was just, like, really, like, moving the genre. And, like, that's what I think, like, really made Chucky, like, an icon, like, by himself and not just, like, a horror figure.
And they just keep making more and more Chuckies and a TV show.
And I watched the series. It's pretty good.
I enjoy it. Would you ever make, like, a sequel to your story? I know that there's, like, the huge twist at the end and we all know who the killer is, but, like, would you do a second one? Would they go on vacation again?
I would.
Ooh.
Yes. There was actually an announcement not too long ago that there's talks of such a thing.
Ooh.
An announcement not too long ago.
Not too long ago.
Well, listen, the strike's over now, so.
Everyone's back in those writers' rooms, chugging coffee and typing away.
They said, hurry the fuck up.
We did things and it did well.
Let's take a quick break, but we will be right back and we're going to talk about writers' rooms.
Do you love anime, gaming, movies, and discovering how your favorite pop culture affects everything you do? Then join us on Crunchyroll Presents The Anime Effect. I'm Nick Friedman.
I'm Lee Alec Murray.
And I'm Leah President. Every week you can listen in while we break down the latest pop culture news and dish on what new releases we can't get enough of.
Whether you love movies, I'm going to tell you all about the hopeful 4K re-release of Tron Legacy that happens.
I'm right there with you. Or music. The music in this show is absolutely incredible.
Or anime.
Yeah, and under this mask is another mask.
You can discover your new favorites right here on The Anime Effect.
Listen every Friday wherever you get your podcasts and watch full video episodes on Crunchyroll or on the Crunchyroll YouTube channel.
Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals.
Every fresh, never frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes.
You'll have over 35 different options to choose from every week, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Also, there are more than 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up and feeling good all day long.
When my fridge is stocked with Factor meals, I'm like, oh, baby, I don't have to think about this. Mm-hmm. Like, it is so nice. The combinations are so good. I am a meat eater, but the vegetable options, there are so many. Like, I remember I had like a, it was like a mushroom with pasta and like a cauliflower rice. And I was like, the mushroom is filling. Like, there's plenty of portion, there's plenty of vegetable, and there's plenty of flavor. And I am usually sort of not a microwave person.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool that this quality of food can just be heated up in the microwave.
And so fast. I also love it because I am a very much into ordering delivery.
I know.
Now having all the food there, I can kind of pick what I want and it's ready in 2 minutes. I don't have to wait an hour for stuff to get delivered. And these are way healthier options than ordering delivery.
Completely. And when they have multiple things in them, you know, sometimes it's like, oh, if I cook for myself, all I'm going to eat is the biggest bowl of pasta you've ever seen in your life. But this is like, you get a little pasta and the chicken and a vegetable all in one dish.
Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus.
And Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. All you gotta do is heat up and savor the good stuff.
Customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Pause to reschedule deliveries that suit your lifestyle.
And we're celebrating Earth Day all month long with Factor. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu items for their lowest carbon footprint meals.
Head to factormeals.com/sloppyseconds50 and use code sloppyseconds50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box.
That's code SLOPPYSECONDS50 at factormeals.com/SLOPPYSECONDS50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
That's a sleigh, baby.
And we're back! Has anyone ever scratched their nose in front of you like that?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I thought I was going to be a first.
Have you had a human experience?
Have you been in front of people?
Never, no.
So you have done a lot of work in Hollywood, in the entertainment world.
Yes.
And a lot of that is in writers' rooms.
Mm-hmm.
So you wrote, let's see if I have the list right, Saved by the Bell, a reboot. You did work on that.
What a wonderful job.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yes.
Michelle Wolf's show.
That was my first job.
That was your first job. Mm-hmm. How long did that show, was that like two seasons, one season?
I think it was one season, I believe.
And then Amber Ruffin show too,
yes.
And that comes with an Emmy nomination for
it
you.
Did.
As
well.
What is your experience in writers' rooms? How are they different? Like how? Like I assume everyone is totally different, but ultimately, everyone you're trying to do the same thing, which is like write a TV show.
Yes, I mean I would compare it to like any other job where kind of the vibe of the room is dictated by like a managerial figure.
Mm-hmm.
So it really does just, it's based on like who's leading the room and how they, and like what system they've created to try to get the most out of their writers. And there's different methods. Some people are just like, oh, we're just like gonna be here for a long time because like it takes a long time to do it. I'm like, okay, well, and their experience.
You would hate
that. I would be like, you know, I'm hard out every day.
So like, and their experience, like that's what it was. Like, oh, they've come from rooms where like that is how that culture of that space was upheld. And then there's other rooms where and this is one of my favorite bosses. They were like, yeah, no, if we have nothing to do, I will not be using your time. Like I have stuff to do, so I can only assume y'all have stuff to do. So unless we know every day what we are doing, I will not tell you to come.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, well, what a good leader.
And
what a good leader.
Would you think that like they were equally as productive or even more productive on the one where you weren't required to be there all the time?
I think that that's objective. And I think... And for me, in writers' rooms, I know what I'm being hired for. Mm. Like, it's not necessarily my job to change an environment. Mm. It's for me to bring what I can bring and hope that like that is helpful to like whatever the creative is to the show. Wow.
I think my phone
is broken.
It
happened in the last episode.
Because I put it on silent then.
Can I ask you a question while he does this very embarrassing thing of turning his phone to silent? Were you responsible for making Jesse Spano do the striptease scene and the reboot?
Absolutely not.
Who was responsible for that? They need an Emmy. That was the best thing I'd ever seen.
I think Saved by the Bell is still like such a funny show.
Yeah.
And I think it's very underrated, like the amount of jokes that were just in it. The cast was very talented. The writers were very talented. I think Tracy is a fantastic showrunner. Like, it was just a really cool experience. And I got to be on it. That was fun as well.
Yeah. Did you feel like you needed to go back and rewatch old episodes to like research it, or it was like a new vibe?
Oh no, like I was a fan of Saved by the Bell. But it is a new thing.
Yeah.
And I came in later, like as a consulting producer. So they wrote like a lot of it. And then I came in and like went over and like added stuff. But I didn't have like a humongous hand in kind of what the season did. That I will give that all to the writers and Tracy. But yeah, it was just like a very, because when certain environments are created and then you kind of just come in them, you just kind of have to adjust. And that was one that was just like a very easy environment to come into, give your best, and then be like, wow, that was great. All right, bye. And I really do think like that's what the job should be. You just kind of come in, you're like, okay, we're out here to like make stuff up.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, we do
play
it.
Pretend.
Tell some jokes and then go home.
Is that, do you bump up against like some egos and some personalities, especially if you're brought in later to a process, like later seasons or in a consulting way to like punch stuff up or make it, I don't know, better, more inclusive? Were they ever using you like that, where they were like, oh, you have a unique personality that these 12 people don't have?
I mean, I feel like that's every job. Like, yeah. That's why I'm hired in the first place. Mm-hmm. I mean, my first couple jobs, I was the only Black person. And I was
really?
Mm-hmm. And I was just like, oh, well, okay, cool. Like, this is not my favorite dynamic, but I'm here. And it's not like they're saying, Dwayne, say Black shit. I'm just like, nah, I'm going to just say the shit that I want. And that may be Black, maybe gay. Maybe just regular shit. And so I think that, like, I've never, even though I felt token, I've never, like, really embodied that. Because you're just going to get what you're going to get. And then hopefully my next job, I wish for the best. And be like, ooh, please don't let me mope people. And that's why I'm always like, I'll give away advice. I'll help anybody. Like, please come. Like, that is the whole point. Like, you can't. I don't want to change things by myself. Like, please help me.
That's really incredible.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people in your position, I would say, sometimes tend to like gatekeep. Like, they feel like, oh, I got here, so it's for me, and I'm going to work with the people that are here on my level instead of like trying to bring people up with them.
Yes. I think coming up in Chicago and like having relationships like 3P, having like actual, like, some of my closest people in my life that do this work with me, I think I only got where I am because of them. Like, Saved by the Bell, I got because of Shantira Jackson, who's on 3P. Like, that was directly. Like, Amber Ruffin, I knew her from Second City. Like, and we all work very hard because we know what we're faced against. So I don't see any way, like, how it serves me to gatekeep. Because what is that going to do? I'm going to enter a space and then be mad because I have no backup. And I have no support. Like, it just, I see the systemic issues and there's just no solution without community in my mind.
Absolutely.
So that's what I'm going to do. Because selfishly, that's going to make it better for me. Come on, please. I don't want to be uncomfortable. I want to have as much like fun. Like I said, like, my best jobs have just been like easy and fun. And I feel very grateful to have the jobs that I have. But to have like a really cool job that's like bad, you're just like, why? Like, it doesn't have to be.
I know a couple of people who have really cool jobs. Then I'm like, how is that? And they're like,
hate it.
So stressful. Like the
always
title,
trying to quit.
The email signature looks legit as fuck, but like the actual job sucks.
I'm just like, y'all know what this is, right? Y'all know we this is make believe.
It's all fake. It's all pretend games that we're playing.
This should be fun.
Do you like with some of these discussions and, you know, deadline articles and whatever about different development things, like, are you excited to be in charge, or do you more like, you know, adding little bits and pieces here? Like, do you want to be a showrunner?
Oh, I'm obsessed with power.
Really?
I think that's the whole game.
Say.
It's impact.
Got a little warm
power.
In here.
Yeah, I got hot. Say that one more time.
Impact, power. I like that is the goal. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm good at being a worker, but that's not my instinct. I just love, it's that, again, that delusion of confidence. I love my mind. I love the person that I've become. So I want to be able to make the things that I want in my brain come to life, as I've seen others do.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of barriers that stop that from happening are annoying. And in order to move them, I need power.
Absolutely. I mean, I
don't often think about
thing.
Barriers in work as annoying, but that's really what they are. Truly, just like, I'm like, oh, this is frustrating, and how do I solve this?
Maybe power.
It's like, it's annoying.
Yeah, it's just like, I just saw that person do it, and they didn't have that. That's annoying.
Oh my God, that's it.
So what do I got to do?
Yeah, what do I have to do to make this happen?
Get some power.
I want to talk a little bit about Chicago.
Yes.
He is from Chicago.
Yes. But whenever real, actual Chicago natives come on, I have to clarify that I'm from Evanston.
I love that. Thank you.
Yes, because...
It's a thing.
Well, you know, it's sort of like people who, like, are from West Covina, but say they're from L.A.
Oh, yeah. Or I'm like, I'm from Houston, but I'm actually from, like,
Katy, Texas. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you grew up in a Chicago zip code.
Yes.
But what about Chicago or growing up in Chicago, like, made you lean towards comedy? Or what did you, like, see when you were younger that you were like, I like that. I want to do jokes and funny things.
I think generally, like, performing was just, like, a thing that I really liked. Mm-hmm. Like, I really like dancing. I would, like, watch music videos and be like, oh, this looks fun. Like, and, like, just copy that. So, like, comedy wasn't, like, really a thing for me until high school, and I kind of just like fell into it. I was just kind of figuring out like who I was. I was just like, I played football for like a while, then I was like, oh, this is aggressive. Like, oh boy,
all these berries.
I was like, truly, I said stop chasing me, oh my God. And that was the whole thing, because I was a running back. They would just give me the ball, and I'd be like, stop giving me the ball, I don't want
this
for me,
get tackled.
Please stop. I don't like this. So then I quit, and then I joined my school's dance team, because I was like, love dancing. But at that point, I was still in the closet, and I was like, it was truly just me and then the only other out gay boy in the school. And I said, oh, no, they're all going to know. So then I quit that as well.
Oh, no.
I know. But, you know, I would still be dancing at home in the closet. And then my junior year of high school, I remember it's very like, Degrassi vibes. Like, I was like walking down the hall trying to figure out like, what am I gonna do next? Like, who am I?
And there's some internal voiceover playing.
I had on a green sweater, I remember, because I was like gripping the ends, just being like, what am I gonna do next? And I heard like a commotion. I was just like, who are these kids making noise? And I went to, and like,
the
yes, and it was a bunch of theater kids, and they had just finished casting for like the 10 short comedies. There was like, that was the fall like play. They were doing 10 short comedies. And I walk in and I'm like, looks like they're having so much fun. Like, what is this? So I talked to the drama teacher and was like, how can I be involved in this? And she was like, you just missed it. Like, we just cast it all. And I was like, oh, but she was like, oh, but you can just like be here, like hang out, like help, like do like crew stuff. And I was like, sure, why not? This seems fun. And then by the end of that process, I was in so many things. I had like my own thing. Like, people kept like dropping out, and I would just be like, oh, I'll do it. Oh, and there was like one scene where I was playing like three characters at once and I was just like switching hats. And I was just like, this is so much fun. And everybody around me was like, oh, you're really taking to this. And then so I did that. And that was like my first play. And I was like, this is so much fun. And then she was the director of the musicals and also the school's improv team. So she was like, come do that too. And I was like, all right. And then I just found out that like, I was like really good at it. And then she convinced me. I have like a stand-up joke about it because I said like she like blindsided me, but like the movie because it was like this.
She's Sandra Bullock.
Yes, very much. She was like, little black boy, you should go do theater. And I was like, what is that? That's real? I thought this was just for fun. And she was like, no, you can go to like a conservatory. Like you can like do it for real. So I was like, sure, white woman. So I auditioned for one school, and I was like, if I get in, then I'll go. Sarah Miller. I actually just ran into her recently.
Really?
And she, during the strike, because her husband is also a writer.
Wow.
And we reminisced, and she was like, look at you now. And I said, look at you, Sandra Bullock. I auditioned for one school, and I got in, so I was like, oh, I should go do theater. So then I went to acting school, and then I got cut from the acting program.
Because you were too good?
I was DePaul University.
I was explaining this concept to some people who were like, wait, you apply to college, you pay your money to go to the school, and then they can get rid of you?
Yes.
Yes. They took 48 freshmen, and then by the second year, they had to cut half. And
that's one of the more like cutthroat. There's only a few that still do it.
They ended it. I think like the year after me. It was not great.
Also, a bad business decision. You know what I mean? If you got all these people.
Yes, and it's very funny. There's this like running joke because honestly, I don't think the school really knew what to do with like queer black men, and that's also one of the reasons I started doing comedy because I was just like, this is not fun. I'm just like playing like an abusive father in this play, that old angry man in that play, and me being like, I am so young and fun. Like, what are we doing?
What's the running joke?
Oh, right. So they basically, so 3 years in a row, they cut Terrell McCraney, then Jeremy Harris, and then me. And we were all like, well, like,
seems like a pattern.
Guys.
Seems like you're cutting the lead star talent here.
And then we all went to do our thing and we were all like, well, look at that. Like,
I
do think that is like the intersection of our identities and also just like being challenged that way so young and being like, oh, you gonna cut me? Oh, I'm gonna be successful just so you can regret it. Like, how dare you? I'll show you. And I auditioned for NYU that after they cut me, and I got in, and then I couldn't afford to go. So then
they don't do scholarships.
No, it was a lot of money. And I was like, okay, so I have to do this on my own. And then I saw that Second City was one stop away on the train, and I went to see one of their shows, and I was like, I think I could do this. And then that's where I went there, and then comedy. So that's how it all started.
That's amazing.
That's incredible. Do you still feel like you still have that drive of like, I got cut, but I'm still better than, well, not better.
No, I feel like that was just like, at that age, that was like a very like fundamental moment of my like transformation as I grew up.
Right.
But that just helped me like recognize similarly, to just like existing in systems and how your perception of yourself versus your perception of how others see you in that space will probably never match. But knowing how to be aware of what they are seeing so that I can navigate it in a way that's beneficial to me.
And that passion for dance hasn't really left you because I feel like, I mean, maybe I'm imagining this, but I feel like the last time I saw you do stand-up was a while ago.
Yeah.
I think up here, actually, like in North Hollywood somewhere. But I feel like
That's the funny name of a place.
It was like right after I moved to LA, so maybe. I mean, not there, but up the road. But did you ever, like, you know, just be like, hit it, DJ, at the end of your stand-up set or at the start of it and do a little dance? Because I feel like I've seen you dance in between jokes or something.
No, I used to do solo sketch comedy.
Oh, okay.
And I used to have a lot of dance in there. So I did dance for, like, a very long time. I did, like, some, like, companies. I, like, during college, and, like, I was dancing and doing comedy at the same time. Mm-hmm. And they were just, like, a lot. So I had to choose at some point. And I was like, well, I can still like incorporate everything I've learned in dance with comedy.
Yeah.
And then I remember my very last audition, I was just like mentally was also like, I'm not strong enough. Because I auditioned for the Paris Opera Ballet. They were doing like a sit down. And they like, it started with them being like, hey, everybody take off your shirts. And then it just kind of went down the line and was like, no, 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 no. And I was like, yes, this is how this works. But also, oh my God, I did book it.
okay, slay.
But, said model.
But for the people that didn't, I said, oh, what if I wasn't one of them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's too much. And then just like kind of knowing, I'm always like seeing like what's the road that's going to like leave me the most happiest. Mm-hmm. And I just knew that like what I would have to commit to dance to be successful at it, just like a little more than I wanted to give, which is like my body has to look a certain way. I have to like just do a lot more than I just knew even at that point that I was like, that's a lot. It's harder on your body. And at the time, comedy, I was just like, oh, I see the pool. I think I could do this. Like,
yeah.
The bar was a little lower, to be honest.
So my mom, a big fish, put me in the pond.
And I said, okay, I'm seeing what y'all giving. I can give this.
I can give this.
And more.
And a little bit
dancing,
more.
Dancing, I said, whew, I got to give a lot.
All of my friends that were dancers have, like, stopped dancing by the age of, like, 32,
well, 34. Well, yeah,
they're
that's
like, my body's giving out, my knees click. And I was like, so now for the rest of your life, you're just going to hurt?
I had an ACL reconstruction last year.
Really?
From dancing too hard?
From my dance class, yeah. And I'm not even doing it professionally no more. I was just in a dance class and being like, this is fine.
Snap.
And then I did, like a little pivot too quick, and then boom.
That's my biggest fear. I broke my hip doing drag.
What'd you do?
Cartwheel on an unsturdy stage.
Oh.
And it moved, and so did I.
Mm.
Then I fell. And it was to Whitney Houston's I Want to Dance with Somebody.
No.
So I was crawling around going, help, help.
They all thought it was
help me. And they all thought it was a joke. And then the song ended and the EMTs came out. And they cut me right out of that costume. And they were like, you need to go to the hospital.
What was that healing process like?
Did you have to get like a hip replacement? 6 months of just like taking opioids and laying around.
Nice.
To kill the pain. Yeah, it was not fun.
Yeah, no, it's not a good time.
A sickening GoFundMe, though.
Oh, yeah, baby. They had to, because I was, okay, so, well, I mean, it's not that important, but my insurance would not pay for me to see a specific doctor in time. They were like, oh, you can see him in 2 months. And I was like, but I'm in pain now. So I had to make a GoFundMe to pay to go see a doctor one time.
America.
It was disgusting.
America, this is you.
Let's take a break. We'll be right back.
And we're back! You know Wicked?
I do.
You excited for that movie?
Yeah, that's a very special musical in my heart. That was the first musical I ever saw.
Where'd you see it?
Chicago.
Oh, because didn't it open in Chicago and then they moved it to Broadway?
It was there for like 100 years.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember what theater was
at. It was at the Orpheum across from Borders because they had a giveaway where you would put your name in a hat.
A witch's hat?
Yeah, and then they pick your name out and I won the raffle.
Oh, that's even more special. That's magical.
How many times have you seen it? How many times have you seen it?
I don't even know. Like,
okay, so what do you think about the second act? Because I think you could go and see the first act and then just kind of leave.
No, the second act gives the drama.
I mean, yes, it does have the more dramatic songs, but they also try to shoehorn in the Wizard of Oz story.
That's my favorite part.
Yeah, that's the commercialability
of it. I told you that with the movie, I hope they, because they're trying to make the movie, it's going to be two movies. I hope that they really extend all of that shoehorning where it's like, and that one was the Scarecrow.
Well, yeah, they said it's going to be like, involved more of the book too. Which
and I'm excited really to see all of that happen in the movie. So I like when they do that because it still gives that magical thing where you're like, oh, the
dead. Yeah, it really like combines mm-hmm. the new and the old. Because you're like, oh.
Take it from a writer.
But just from like, it really does like just changes the point of view of the camera. Mm-hmm. So you feel like you're in on something.
Yeah. You see her little shadow skip away.
Uh-huh. You're like, oh, little fucking dog. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just went and saw The Wiz. Oh, and they didn't have a dog.
Because the black people's history with dogs.
But it's in the
civil rights.
I could have sworn in the movie she has a dog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but this production.
This production, Wayne Brady said no dogs.
They said, mm-mm.
He was really good. He was dancing up a storm.
Plays The Wiz?
Yeah.
I love Wayne Brady.
I do too.
He's so talented. I saw him in Hamilton and I said, this motherfucker is.
He was in Hamilton?
Yeah.
He can like really sing and dance. Like he mm-hmm. was up there keeping up with these people.
Yeah.
I have tea on The Wiz.
Well, let's.
What is
it? Do you want to hear some tea on The Wiz?
Sure.
It might not be that piping, but you said that you saw it, and then a friend of mine who knows about things texted me.
Let's get into it.
Because you were saying that you sat down and they announced a different Dorothy.
Yes.
And that was disappointing.
The audience went, you sat down, the lights go off, they tell you to turn your phones off, and they went, Dorothy tonight will be played by her understudy. And the audience went, oh. And that girl, you know, is just standing in the wings like, ready to go on, and she had to be like,
She's like, okay, stay in it. Stay in it.
So the info is Ree the Wiz and understudy Dorothy. If they announced it, it means the other Dorothy called out after the house opened. The announcement is now a last resort, so the company stays in compliance with union rules. Most shows now do understudy announcements as a QR code in the playbill.
That's what I said, and there was nothing in the playbill, and there was no announcement outside.
So that means she called out after the house opened. When I was doing some cursory research on you on Wikipedia, why does Wikipedia always do this to famous people?
Oh my God.
Under personal life?
I think it's terrible.
Perkins is gay.
I think it's crazy.
Perkins is gay.
Perkins is gay.
And then they cite two places.
Two sources. Oh, excuse me. Excuse me.
What is that about?
I think we should start doing that to everyone's page. Why can't I go to yours? Does yours say that?
I don't have a page.
Oh.
Does Denzel Washington page says he's straight? Well, he does have like a family and
probably,
stuff.
Yeah.
But
there are more facts about your personal life that are easy to get. Perkins is from Chicago.
Yes.
Perkins is gay. They
said Perkins is a fag. I used to have it as my Twitter
Perkins is gay.
Banner. And I made a joke. Like I was like, this feels like my bully wrote this. Like, why would they? Why would they do that?
Incite it twice.
It's crazy.
Because you've lived in Chicago, obviously. You lived in New York for a bit. Mm-hmm. Now LA.
Yes.
Where is it best to be gay? Which of those places?
Heaven.
Because
you know they all were lying. I feel like it's hard to say because my versions of gay changed because every place I went, my class changed.
Mm.
And I think that really plays a lot into mm-hmm. it. Because in Chicago, that was like youthful. Like I was like, that was like me finding myself. So that was like a different kind of gay.
Mm-hmm.
Then when I moved to New York, that was like, oh, I'm like working, struggling kind of gay. So that was like different. Then LA was like when I became like more successful. And then I was like, oh, this is like more like a privileged gay. And I wouldn't say it's better, but it is better to have money because money makes life easier.
Mm-hmm.
And once I had money, I could do things like have therapy, get massages. and I feel like that gave me just like a better way to like exist.
Mm-hmm.
And so like that's version very nice. But the other two versions I feel like were nice for like different ways.
Mm.
Like if I... finding myself with like theater and all that stuff, that was me when like I first came out and being in acting school and being like, I literally just came out this like past summer and now I feel like I'm being told to put all of myself back in a box.
Yes.
And I was like, I mentally cannot do these two things at the same time. And that is one of the reasons I feel like I got cut, because there was a resistance and maybe like, what is this? Like, this does not feel like what I thought this would be. Because prior to that, there was like no training. I was just like out here on vibes, being like, ooh, I'm just doing shit, like acting. You just pretend.
Yes.
Right.
So then like to like have that, to be in that space, I just like, oh, that really formed a big part of my identity. But I mean, like, I cannot do this if I cannot be this version of myself that feels the most like myself.
Right.
So I just like keeping that really like allowed me to go to these spaces. Like in New York, I still like kind of had that, but it was really just like such a hard time. New York was so hard. And to come from like Chicago, like it was like very helpful. I like did so much, and I really think it like switched the trajectory of my career. But like as a human being, I was just like, I don't like hustling. Mm-hmm. I'm not gonna be easy. Like, yeah. I'm tired, and everything I do is to get closer.
I want therapy and massage
to that. Truly, I said, in New York was just like always asking stuff of me.
Yes,
in a way that like once I got what I got, I said I have to leave because this can't be constant. Like, I'm not strong enough. Like, I know who I am. I know where I thrive, and just like the culture of New York was just like, I didn't agree with it, which was just like, oh, like it was like, it builds character because it is hard. And I do think I met some of the best people there. Mm-hmm. And when I go back, I'm like, what a beautiful place. But to live there, I said, I'm too soft. Like, I don't want to.
I just got back from there and I was like, well, I forgot the hustle there. Like, and your brain sort of slides back into like that. Or for me at least, I was like, well, we got to do 10 things all day. We got to get out here.
I said, do you motherfuckers not sleep? Like, I am not used to this. I said,
and they go, and I'm going to go home and change in the middle of it. I went, maybe I'm staying out.
The New York Times, there's a quote from them about it says, you.
Perkins is gay.
No, the quote is one of the queer young comics redefining American humor. Does that like, is that added pressure? You're like, girl, you can write anything you want. I'm going to stay over here and do what I want to do.
Oh, no. I hear that and I say, I agree.
I wish I had that much. It's the therapy. It's the money in the therapy.
I think it's the massages.
No, wait, every time I do something, I just like tear myself down.
Face massages they're doing?
Those
the gua sha or the.
Yeah, any and all of that.
With those like the little things.
All I'm seeing on TikTok.
I try to do it to myself.
All I'm seeing on TikTok are people like full on laying down on massage beds and going in on their faces, like
it
squirping
moves,
around
like the fluid in your face.
I want that so bad.
I was told to do it and I keep forgetting to buy them because it's always like I always forget the sound, like it's called
gua sha.
Yeah, and then I just be like, I give up. Gua sha.
It's
gua
like the meme of that lady trying to pronounce quinoa.
Quinoa.
No, but the ones I'm talking about are the people are doing a treatment.
Oh.
They're like masseurs.
I would rather someone do that for me.
I want to go do that. What are we doing? We're doing body sculpting.
We're going to get our body cool sculpted. Oh. You don't have to worry about that.
We're going to do the face thing.
We're going to get you a hairpiece.
And then we're going to do a toupee.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's on the to-do list. But just for
you
fun.
You want to add anything else?
No. Therapy. Yeah. Always.
Yeah. Okay, can I ask you kind of an out-of-pocket question?
Are you gay?
She...
No.
She told me today that her therapist knows who I am. So when she's talking about work stuff, he like knows who I am.
Yeah, that's good.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, it gives context.
I blocked him on Instagram.
Your therapist?
Yeah, I don't need
Why do you know his Instagram?
Because I know his full name, so all I had to do was type it in.
Yeah, because you know how identities work.
Do you have a therapist?
I had the one who said to me, you're good to go. And I was like, you're bad at your job. So I fired him.
I've had a therapist tell me that.
They're like, wait, you're successful?
This one did say we could go every other week because you seem pretty regulated right now. And I was like, okay, that makes sense. But he's never like, we're good, you're fine.
You're fine.
Yeah, everybody's just like, you're healed.
No, if someone ever told me that, I'd be like, you're the problem here. Let's switch this around
That's
and figure
what
out
happened.
What's going on with you, baby.
It was just like, we got to a point of being like, yes, we have all of the tools. Like, you know, is well, either you're going to use these tools or you're going to cope. Like,
yeah.
And I was like, I don't want to keep talking about the same shit. Like, we agree. That's true. And then when I needed therapy again, I got it again. And then I saw a psychiatrist. Like, I feel like it is like I've had therapy since I was like a child. And so there is like a system.
Well, my parents always, every time I tell them that I'm in therapy, they're like, you don't need that. That's mumbo jumbo. That's impossible. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And I was like, little do you know, you're the problem.
Yes. I had a speech impediment when I was very young.
Oh.
So I had to have it. Like, it was like, I've had it maybe since like kindergarten. And so I would have it like yearly. Then I would have it. I used to run from them in high school because I'd be like, leave me alone. Like, why are you trying to talk to me? And then it went away. And then it came back as an adult, so I had to go back to speech therapy maybe like four or five years ago.
What was it?
Just the environment that I was in was very triggering in a way that like caused me anxiety that kind of remanifested like in my larynx.
Wow.
And as an adult going back to speech therapy, I had so much more clarity just about like, oh, I understand this in a way that I did not as a child.
Mm.
But yes, and because there's not like a lot of scientific proof as to why people stutter, it's just regular therapy to try to understand like why your body is reacting in this way and trying to pinpoint ways in which we can create systems to try to combat it in real time.
Because as a kid, it kind of feels like punishment going to do something. Yes. Like
yeah,
that,
it feels
right?
like you did something wrong.
And as an adult, you're like self-care.
Yes, you're like, please let me know myself better.
I want to ask a couple questions about Twitter.
Yuck.
In the comedy space.
Oh.
Because it feels like, obviously, before it was sold and before the name changed and blah, blah, blah.
X.
Yes.
It feels like that was kind of a way people got noticed. Like, people were getting jobs off of Twitter. And, like, if you had a fun Twitter presence, like, that could, like, supersede you, like, writing a spec script because someone could just say, like, hey, let's have a meeting or whatever. Yes. What was your relationship to like that kind of social media as a comedian?
I thought Twitter was very helpful for me.
Yeah.
It's very funny, to be honest, because I do think it, when you're able to see somebody's like brain in that format, it kind of mirrors what a writer's room is, which is you sitting around a room just saying shit. And if a lot of the shit you say is comedic, that could probably lead to you being very helpful in somebody's room. Twitter definitely got me jobs. And it was a great place to like learn how, like what resonates. There are jokes from like in the Blackening that I got from my Twitter. Like I was like, oh, I wrote this tweet and it got 100,000 people to like and retweet it. That is hilarious.
When the diva goes,
why would I not use this? And then I started, and then as I got to be more successful, I just stopped putting my jokes on Twitter because I was like, oh, like I now have enough information that like I can write jokes because the O'Reilly Auto Parts part of the Blackening is a tweet.
That was a tweet?
Yes. Also, that scene where she says, are there any white people that would want to kill us? And she said, yes, this stranger on Twitter said that he was going to kill me because I said that the O'Reilly Auto Parts song is more culturally relevant than the Star Spangled Banner. That exact tweet, I tweeted that. And there was a bunch of people saying that they was going to kill me. Like, that was, like, literally, like, I took that from the internet and put it in a movie because I was like,
so smart.
Look at that. Like, you're mad, and yet I'm putting your like, you're making me money. Like, this is what this is for. Like, and I think that is, I love Twitter for that. I don't think it serves the same purpose now.
No.
It was very helpful.
It's a cesspool. It's a political
It's sad because it
it's
really
very
was
sad.
Helpful.
It was a thing. All right. We're going to take a break and be back with our final segment.
O'Reilly
Auto Parts.
Ow!
And we're back. Oh, wait. I guess that was us coming back.
Sure.
Sure.
We're also back.
We're back.
And it's time for our final segment, which we lovingly call Fuck Talk. This is a segment where we share sex stories.
This is the segment where illicit, your publicist gets tight.
Wild and crazy stories from our past, present, or future.
We've called some voicemails.
Called?
Yeah.
Go off, sis.
Come on. Bubblery.
Cool.
I do have some voicemails from some people who called in, so I thought maybe we could give them a listen and react. Oh. You can also just hold that up, too, if that's easier for you.
Ooh.
There you go.
You feel very Mariah.
Yeah, I do.
I always feel very Padma Lakshmi in Glitter.
Because they stole her voice.
And she was bad at singing in the film.
Have you seen Glitter recently?
Mm-mm. Not since 9/11.
Don't do that. They don't want to hear about that.
My husband and I had this man over yesterday. And after he proceeded to give me a really mediocre toothy blowjob and then basically hold my husband hostage for 10 minutes while he came and I just laid there. I look over at the chair in the living room, and he's left his giant plastic cock ring just sitting on our actually really nice chair. I don't know what to do with this right now. Right now it's sitting in a pile next to a get well card from my grandmother and something that I need to bring to the vet for my cat. I don't know what to do with this thing. Do I keep this? Do I like be nice and say, oh, hey, I have your cock ring, or just throw it out?
Throw it out.
I don't want this man back in my house. Okay. Let me know. Bye.
Thoughts.
Throw it out. Just throw it out. Who cares? It's just a cock ring.
Yeah, no. Yeah, you throw it out and then erase it from your memory.
Yeah, that sounds like something that you need to really block out.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
A 10-minute hostage-y toothy blowjob.
I left a cock ring somewhere.
Ugh.
Was at the dad's house.
Oh, God.
And they kept it for me. But
you went to return.
6 months later, they were like, found the cock ring. It was under their bed.
Toss it. I say, hey, guess what? I say toss it, especially if you don't ever want to see him again. Or do if you live in an apartment, go down to the first floor, put it on the door handle.
Oh.
I mean, wash it. Put it on the door handle and be like, you can come grab it. It's there.
Oh, I see. Or you can just put it in a bag.
Or like an envelope.
Yeah. Just out of the street. You don't have to put it on the door handle.
That's crazy.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, right. Put it in an envelope.
Here's the follow-up, though.
Oh.
There's a follow-up.
So the second I hung up, I realized that tomorrow was a garbage day. And, it's in the garbage. So, sorry if you told me I should keep it. Maybe I'll stick it on my front stoop with a sign that says free and somebody wants it. Thanks. Love you guys. Goodbye.
That reminds me of a time that me and my friends were like walking through the East Village, and I think like a sex shop had closed.
In what city?
New York, Concrete Jungle. You know that one?
Wet Dream Tomato.
Do you know whose song that is?
Huh?
Who sings that song?
Of the two singers, whose song is it?
It's Jay-Z, but Alicia Keys has like a solo version. I heard it in a barbershop once, and I said, what are all these verses?
Where'd it go? Yeah, she has Empire State of Mind Part 2, but it's slowed down.
Yes, and she's on the piano.
And she's on a piano.
Piano.
No, but I always thought that was her song, and then I went to go perform it one time, and I realized there was like so much Jay-Z.
Yes.
And I didn't know it at all. So now I do a performance of it where I just fast forward through the Jay-Z and just do her part. So I was walking down the street in the East Village, and I guess like a sex shop had closed or some sort of sex fiend had just moved out. But there was a box that said free, and in it was just the craziest amount of cock rings and dildos and like toys and fleshlights. And it was like one of those big moving boxes, like a Home Depot moving box filled with it. Isn't that insane?
What'd you do?
I'm not using someone else's sex toys. So we laughed at it, probably took a photo on our flip phones.
But I thought you said a sex store closed. That's just back stock inventory. But
no, I didn't know what it was. Looked like a sex toy. They were loose. They might have been the ones that were out on the display.
Yeah, just loose. No,
that's a lot of hands touching.
Are cock rings like a expensive thing?
No.
Yeah. It depends. But no.
What's the difference? Like
what are you looking for?
My nail fell off.
Oh, it's probably on the ground.
Yeah, we'll get to that later.
Because, like, I'm not really versed in, like, cock ring technology.
Uh-huh.
What is the, like, are they...
I think...
Do they do something more than just, like, hold it? Like what would make it expensive?
You're the pervert.
Some of them are stainless steel or metal. This one was clearly plastic, as described.
Okay.
Sometimes there are... three holes.
Oh, for the balls?
So the balls.
For the
balls?
Yeah.
So like the balls drop down, the cock goes through, and then the other hole would be for the base. So it's like each thing is separated.
And what does that do?
It just,
some people like their balls being pulled on.
Tugged down and then tightened up.
And then the cock ring itself will trap blood in it so it won't go flaccid. Inflate. It just stays hard.
Yeah.
And turns purple and cold eventually.
But I think it's about...
You're like when you tie your finger too tight on something? Well,
not if you're tied up. I know guys who just, they have like a piece of string.
Oh.
And it's there. They just sort of wrap it up.
Wow.
Yeah. And then there are drawstring ones. That have, you know, the little, it's like a sort of a rubbery,
like when you go camping,
a rubbery loop, and then like it has like a little like thing. Yes, exactly. So there are many different times. Oh, like I don't think that
pull tight on a luggage.
Much of them are that expensive, but I will say, like,
sometimes sex
finding
stores
a good one that really works for you, it's like you gotta kiss a lot of frogs, you know what I mean? And so it is good to find one that makes sense.
Okay.
And you know what? The more you know.
So I've gone back to places. All right, I have one more for us.
You went back because you wanted seconds, not because you needed your cock ring.
Hey, Slops. One time I hooked up with this truck driver. He was a truck driver for Disney on Ice, and he was in my area. And we hooked up on an app. And when I went to his hotel room, super hot, little bit older guy. And we started going at it. He started rimming me. And then he started fucking me. But I didn't really feel it when it was going in. And he later told me that when he was eating me out, he had a cough drop in his mouth to numb me because he was pretty big guy. And I wasn't super worried, but he was very thoughtful in that regard. Anyway, I thought it was pretty cool that he went to such lengths to make sure I wasn't in pain.
Whoa! Oh, that's the new Wicked riff.
Oh, okay.
Thoughts on this?
I don't like that at all. I feel like you're going to need to tell me if you're doing something like that.
Yeah, I didn't know where this was going. But the thank you, I really said, wait, like, what if you were allergic to, like,
yeah,
what, you can't just, also, like, doesn't that's not, like, safe, like
no, I don't think it's meant for numbing, like, yeah, like, anything you're but not, your throat.
You shouldn't be numb.
You shouldn't be numb, so you can know what's happening inside of your body.
Going wrong.
And also, you don't know the capabilities of that bottom. He may be like, bring it on, this is no problem for me. And then he said he couldn't feel it. You stole his pleasure, sir.
And I could have damaged him, potentially.
The thank you is kind of wild, right?
Mm-hmm. He said, wow, how thoughtful. And I said, whoa, you need to set more boundaries.
Yeah.
Mr. Disney on Ice was like, I've run into too many problems, and this tonight's got to be a win for me. So I'm pulling up that lozenge.
How do you even come up with that or think of something like that?
It's like a little bit of Listerine in the douche water. How do you think of that?
Wait, dude, do people do that?
It's been.
Does that not burn?
I would assume
it burns my mouth. Why would it not burn your ass?
I think it's like a droplet.
Well, then what's the point?
Freshness.
Girl, we're doing too much back there.
Just I think it should live. Be like, if then anything,
just put
it should
an
be
altoid
like,
in your asshole. Like,
it should be tea tree oil.
Something organic.
Yeah, something a little less burn.
A mojito.
Yes.
Ooh, muddle up some mint.
Get some mint in there.
I know what you do with that muddling tool when you're off the pod. You better muddle up some mint in that booty hole.
That's nuts.
I don't like that, and I think that if you enjoyed that, then good for you, but know that also that may have been crossing a line.
Yeah, you may have been a victim.
And on that, Dwayne, thank you so much for being here today and listening to that. I hope you're not traumatized too much from that.
No. Trauma, who's that? I grew up in it. I'm used to it.
What do you want people to be on the lookout for?
Me.
Where?
Y'all watch The Blackening. It's streaming.
Fun.
You can find it on Amazon Prime, Stars, Hulu, you know, wherever those places
all
be.
All the girls.
Go watch it. It's so funny. We were all scream cackling in the theater.
Yeah. What else is happening? Oh, it was just announced yesterday. I'm in this new Apple TV show.
Fun.
Yeah, that will be fun. So that's cool.
What's the name of that show?
It's called The Studio.
Shout out to
Seth Rogen. I love that man.
Oh, nice.
And Evan,
I love him too.
Goldberg. Yes.
And you're also on The Upshaws.
The Upshaws is coming back. It's coming back soon. April. Yes. That's so nice. I forget, because I've come back like every season. It's been really cool.
Yeah.
Shout out to The Upshaws.
That was quite the shock people. And reveal.
Mm. Yes.
That the Sun is gay? I don't think you watched the show.
No, I didn't watch
it.
I auditioned for The Sun. And they said, push it up. And I said, I can't. I'm kidding.
Like, that's trauma.
And then
that's
said,
the trauma there, baby.
But you're going to be the boyfriend. I said, you know, yeah. I'll take
it again. You're like, I seduced him with the swish. Call me Hector with the good bus.
I said, but you love me, don't you? You're the most fun apart from me.
Where can everyone find you on social media?
At Dwayne Perkins, DEWAYN.
Oh, yeah, you got your name.
Yeah. Ooh, I just got it recently. Power. I took it from this. I've been trying to get it for years, and there was this old man.
Power.
Who I assumed may have passed. And I said, because I sent him a message in like years ago. And I said, give it to me. Give it, I'll pay you. Then he did it. So then I talked to the man, Mark Zuckerberg. And I said, give it to me. And they did.
What was your old handle?
Oh, just my name with the initial in the middle. There's a K.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
You said, give me what's mine.
Yeah. I said, give me what's mine.
Well, I'm glad that old man died.
Same. R.I.P.
All right. Give me the old outro, people.
Sorry, what?
R.I.P.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Sloppy Seconds. You can follow us on Instagram at Sloppy Pod. You can send us an email at sloppysecondspod@gmail.com or always call into our Fuck Talk storyline at 213-536-9180. And don't forget to like and subscribe so you don't ever miss an episode, which come out every Tuesday and Friday. Goodbye. Oh, wait. Let me do the new one. Goodbye, you know?
Yeah, and if you want to sign up for Mom Plus Gold, you get our full episodes uncensored, our full video episodes, and you get them one day early, plus monthly episodes of Sloppier Seconds and all of Mom Podcast premium content. So you can sign up at mompodcast.plus, and we'll flex on out of here. We'll see you next time. Slay.
To get access to our full uncensored video episodes ad-free and one day early, sign up for Mom Plus Gold at mompodcasts.plus.
Sloppy Seconds is produced by Moguls of Media, a.k.a. Mom.
Hosted by Big Dipper and Meatball.
Engineered by Margot Padilla.
Editing and sound design by William Pitts.
Executive produced by Willem, Alaska Thunderfuck, Big Dipper, and Joe Cilio.
Our artwork was drawn by Christian Cimarroni.
And our theme song was written by Mike Malarkey.